The effeminate-looking man, Jean Chicot, was sitting on a chock, smiling, a small automatic in his hands. Biggles went straight up to him. Did you fire that shot?
I clean my gun. So he go off.
These accidents come sometimes, yes?
Biggles did not answer. His fist flew out in a vicious uppercut. Every scrap of the pent-up anger that was in him went behind that blow. Chicot went straight over backwards and crashed across the concrete apron. He twisted for a moment and then lay still. Biggles' face was white, and his lips were set in a straight line as he looked down at him. Keep your hands away from your belt, McBain, snapped Algy. Seeing what was coming, he had whipped out his automatic the instant Biggles struck the blow. Biggles looked round. Plug him if he moves, Algy, he said grimly. If this gang of crooks wants it hot, by thunder they can have it. Say, what's going on?
Biggles spun round and saw that a newcomer had arrived on the scene. It was a constable of the Northwest Mounted Police.
What's going on? Said the constable again. Nothing to speak of, replied Biggles. My friends and I just arrived by air. For some reason best known to himself, McBain tried to scare us off by getting his playmate to pull a gun on us. So I had hit him.
The constable regarded Biggles thoughtfully.
What are you doing in this out-of-the-way place, anyway?
I'm putting money into Arctic Airways, which belongs to a friend of mine, Wilkinson.
I want to know where he is, and I reckon McBain knows.
The constable turned to McBain.
Where's Wilkinson?
Search me, Delaney.
Well, when did you last see him?
Oh, 4 days back. He was taken off, headed north for Moose Creek, I guess.
And he hasn't come back?
Well, I ain't looked for him.
You had a good look at the inside of his office, at any rate, put in Biggles coldly.
McBain looked at Biggles evilly, then turned to the constable.
Well, what are you going to do about it? He inquired. I've got something else to do besides standing here gassing.
So have I, returned the constable. You ought to have reported Wilkinson missing, McBain. I shall have to ask anyone going north to look out for him.
Don't worry, constable, I'll do that, said Biggles quickly. I'm going to look for him right now.
Biggles turned towards the Jupiter.
Come on, you fellows, he went on quietly to the others, taking no further notice of Delaney or McBain.
Wilkes must be down somewhere between here and Moose Creek. We've got nearly 4 hours of daylight left, so the sooner we start looking for him, the better.
Within 5 minutes, the Jupiter was in the air again, headed northwards, with Algy watching the ground on the starboard side and Ginger on the other. For a long time, they flew over almost continuous forests of fir, with great outcrops of grey rock thrusting upwards like spurs. Then the country started to rise, and the Jupiter was soon skimming over the treetops. Biggles eased the stick back and climbed slowly to a safer height. At the end of an hour, the forest had become broken into isolated groups of wind-twisted trees, and shortly afterwards even these failed to appear, giving way to a dismal panorama of gaunt rock.
If Wilkes had to go down and land on that stuff, I should say he hadn't a hope. I shouldn't care to have to put a machine down on that... Hello? What's that, dead ahead? It looks like something on the ground. Is it... By heaven, it is. It's a machine. There's somebody beside it. Look, he's waving.
Must be Wilkes, declared Biggles.
Nobody else would be flying up here. Give him a wave.
With Algy hanging out of the window with an arm outstretched, the Jupiter dropped lower, until at last it was circling in a steep bank, not more than 50 feet above the other machine. They could see the man on the ground hobbling away from the stationary machine, from time to time stopping to pick up a boulder and throw it aside.
He's clearing a runway for us, declared Algy.
So I see, answered Biggles with a worried frown. I don't relish the thought of getting down on it all the same.
Biggles turned the machine slowly until it was in line with the runway. Then he allowed it to sink slowly towards it. Flattening out a few inches above the ground, he held the stick firmly, holding the machine off as long as he dared. The Jupiter vibrated from nose to tail skid as her wheels rumbled over the uneven ground, but they stood up to the strain, and the machine finally came to rest about 200 yards from the lone figure, which at once began hurrying towards them. There was no longer any doubt about who it was.
Biggles, by all that's wonderful, cried Wilkes enthusiastically.
Well, might you say, by all that's wonderful,
grinned Biggles, as he shook hands with his old war comrade.
"Oh, the dickens, did you know where I was?"
demanded Wilkes. "Just a minute, old boy. Let's take one thing at a time," suggested Biggles. "I'll tell my story first. We've been to Fort Beaver. Landed there about lunchtime today. We found McBain, and I might tell you, he and I had a few sharp words. Constable Delaney blew in while the argument was in progress, and McBain admitted that you'd flown off and hadn't come back. So we came along to pick up the pieces. What happened to you?" Wilkes's smile faded as he told his story. He spoke bitterly.
"Somebody was kind enough to put a handful of loose cotton waste in my second tank, and it choked the petrol leads. Engines packed up, and I had to come down, but I had enough juice in my gravity tank to enable me to reach this place. I was lucky to make it."
"The cotton waste was McBain's work?" asked Biggles.
"Well, of course."
While they'd been speaking, they had been moving slowly towards Wilkes's machine. "Did you knock your leg when you came down?" asked Biggles, noting that Wilkes was limping.
"Well, I hit my knee a crack against the dashboard when we tipped up," returned Wilkes briefly.
"Machine damaged?"
"Busted tire and a bent prop. I was running some spare machine parts up to Moose Creek. They were wanted urgently, so they'll probably refuse to give me any future work. I've let them down once or twice already. No fault of my own, you can be sure."
Biggles bit his lip thoughtfully. "It's too late to get the stuff up to them today," he said slowly.
"But I think this is our best plan. We'll put all your cargo into my machine and fly it back to Fort Beaver. Tomorrow, Ginger and I will take it to Moose Creek. Smith and Algy had better stay here and get to work on your machine. There's nothing you can't fix up, is there, Smith?"
"Oh, I don't think so, sir."
"Good. Algy, as soon as the machine is ready, fly her back to Fort Beaver. I'll fly low of you tomorrow on my way to Moose Creek, but I'll only land if you signal me to do so. Come on, then, let's get to work. In no time to waste."
It took them, all working hard, about half an hour to transfer the freight from the damaged machine to the Jupiter. And once this was done, Biggles lost no time in getting off, for the sun was already low over the western hills. In a few minutes, the Jupiter was roaring back over her tracks. In spite of the fact that Biggles flew on full throttle nearly all the way, it was practically dark when the scattered lights of Fort Beaver came into sight. Suddenly, Biggles stared ahead through the windscreen. "Are those landing flares on the aerodrome, or am I dreaming?" he jerked out.
"The flares," declared a surprised Wilkes. "Well, I've never known McBain do that before."
Biggles said nothing, but a curious expression came over his face as he stared intently into the gloom. A moment or two later, he cut the engines and glided down towards the lights, only to open up again an instant later and roar up into the darkening sky.
"McBain must take me for a fool," he snarled savagely.
"Why?"
"To fall into such an elementary trap as the one he's set. Those lights are in the wrong place. Had I landed up the line, I should have bashed straight into our hangar. Ginger, drop a signal flare and let's have a look at things. I'd rather trust my own eyes than McBain's flares. Cunning hound."
The signal light burst below the Jupiter, flooding the earth with its brilliant glare, and the trap was exposed to view. Biggles made no further remarks, but concentrated his attention on bringing the Jupiter down safely. Taxiing swiftly up to the shed, he opened the cabin door and jumped down. Not a soul was in sight, and the flares had disappeared. Without speaking, they pushed the machine safely into the hangar.
"Well, fix up quarters here in the hangar," said Biggles. "Then the machine will always be in sight.
Now, I'm hungry. Wilkes, where'd you get your food supplies?"
Down in the village. There's only one place you can get grub, the Three-Star Saloon."
"Then Ginger and I'll go down and lay in a stock. Will you be all right here on your own?"
"Oh, why not?" replied Wilkes. I had to handle things by myself for some time now."
It was a walk of about 2 miles to the cluster of log huts that formed the village of Fort Beaver. There was no mistaking the Three-Star Saloon, for three lanterns hung at regular intervals along the front, enabling the sign to be read. Biggles pushed open the door, and a loud buzz of conversation met his ears. The saloon was lit by several smoky paraffin lamps, around which eddied a mist of rank tobacco smoke.
"Give it a name, strangers," said the barman.
While Ginger ordered a couple of drinks, Biggles took an old envelope from his pocket and started jotting down selected items from the goods he saw exposed for sale. Bread, biscuits, coffee, beans, and the like. Several men, trappers or prospectors, judging from their clothes, were seated nearby, engaged in conversation. But Sir Biggles paid them no attention until a name caught his ears. The name was Wilkinson, pronounced Wilkson by the man who had uttered it. He was an old man and was dressed in the traditional fur jacket of a prospector. Around his neck was wound a white-spotted red scarf, held together incongruously with a distinctive opal-headed tie-pin.
"Yep, just my partner Angus Sterling to think of something for me to do,"
continued the old man in a wheezy voice, as Biggles regarded him with sudden interest.
"I'm pulling out tomorrow, and I near forgot. If you see that fellow Wilkson," says Angus, "tell him I forgot to give him that land transfer. But I still got it. Now I guess I've got to trail across to that pesky aerodrome."
Biggles butted in. "Excuse me, you're Angus Sterling's partner?"
"Sure I am, stranger. Mose is my name. Me and Angus is working a claim on Eskimo Island."
"I'm a friend of Captain Wilkinson. Is it correct that Angus asked you to tell Wilkinson that he still has the transfer of the land he sold him?"
"Ah, that's right enough."
"I'm glad to hear it," Biggles continued. "We need that paper badly. How far away is this Eskimo Island?"
"About 1,500 miles due north, I guess. I'm going back there tomorrow."
"I'm flying north to Moose Creek tomorrow," said Biggles. "If you care to come along, it should save you some time. Maybe we could go right on to your claim." A childish grin spread slowly over the old man's face.
"You mean you'd take me up in an airplane?"
"That's right."
Will it be room for the grub?"
Mose inquired.
"I've a fair load, enough to last me and Angus through the freeze-up."
"You can take anything up to a ton," returned Biggles.
"Oh, well, I ain't got that much. Mister, you got a deal."
"Be at the aerodrome, then, at the crack of dawn. See you in the morning." Biggles settled the bill, and subconsciously aware that a curious silence had fallen on the room, reached for his drink. Simultaneously, there was a deafening roar, and the glass burst into smithereens. For a moment, Biggles stared with startled eyes at the spot where his glass had been. Then, recovering quickly, he looked around. At the far end of the bar stood McBain, a bottle of whiskey in one hand, and a smoking revolver in the other.